What is up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me, episode 19. We got Frank from Fozzie on the episode today. But first, I wanted to talk to you guys about Mr. James Hetfield's best of 2015. And on that best of 2015, he had where Justin Bieber wore a Metallica t-shirt on The Ellen Show. Now, all the nonsense being aside, the question I put out to the podcast universe is, by Justin Bieber wearing that Metallica t-shirt, do you think that any Justin Bieber fans, any Beliebers, actually went out and checked out Metallica? Now, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I know she did not do that. I know she couldn't pick out a Metallica song from a Pantera song, from an AC/DC song. So, tweet at me, at TalkToMeTalk, let me know what you guys think. Did Justin Bieber wearing a Metallica shirt on The Ellen Show make any 12-year-old girls actually go and check out Metallica? Now, I'd like to hear from you guys. Let me know what you think. But yeah, hit me up at TalkToMeTalk on Twitter, facebook.com/TalkToMeTalk, because I don't think that anyone went to check out Metallica because of a Justin Bieber shirt. And I know when I was younger, I would check out bands, and if they were wearing a certain band's t-shirt, I might go check out that band if I really liked the original band who was wearing the shirt. So if Cannibal Corpse was wearing an Obituary shirt, I might go check out Obituary. With all that being said, I really doubt any Justin Bieber fans checked out Metallica just because Justin Bieber was wearing a Metallica t-shirt. And with that being said, everybody, I hope everyone is having a great holiday season this year. So far, it's been great. Hopefully, this is the last episode recording on this microphone. Sorry, microphone. Your replacement is in the mail. Hopefully, it gets here soon, and you guys will check out a little bit more clarity in my voice. Got a lot of great stuff coming in, and I'd just like to say thank you to everyone out there who donated to the PayPal.me site. Once again, it's PayPal.me/TalkToMe. You guys know who you are. Thank you so much. Up in the value of the podcast. It's going to be a great 2016. Got a lot of great guests lined up. I know I keep talking about it, but just a couple of hints out there. Edsel from Dope coming on the podcast. Got a couple of the guys from Flaw coming on the podcast. It's going to be fun. Going to be a fun year. 2016's looking great for the Talk To Me podcast. Thanks to everyone who has listened to the podcast so far this year. It's been a great adventure. Great talking to a lot of my old friends, and it's been great getting to know some of my new friends, some of the people on the podcast that I didn't have a previous relationship who came on the podcast, turned out to be awesome people. I know on the last episode we were going to review the new Star Wars movie on this podcast, but time constraints, it just didn't come together. But I've got some great plans for next week's episode. We're definitely going to review the new Star Wars. Just a little hint. I loved it. I thought it was great. Had a great time. Went and saw it last Thursday, and I hope everyone else loved it. Go ahead and give me your comments on the new Star Wars. I want to read some of those on the next podcast too. So at Talk To Me Talk on Twitter. Once again, at Talk To Me Talk on Twitter. This is an interactive show, people. I need to hear from you so I can put you on the podcast, have everything going great, and I just want to hear from you, put you on the podcast, let your voice be heard on the Talk To Me podcast. But yeah, let me know what you thought of the new Star Wars. I thought it was fantastic. I think JJ did a great job. And on this week's episode, we've got Frank from Fozzie, one of the nicest guys in rock and roll, in heavy metal, in hard rock. So great. Every time I turn around, and like I said on the Billy Gray episode, every time I turn around, they're playing a big festival. They're playing the Kiss Cruise. They're playing, you know, Download and all the wonderful festivals all over the country and all over the world. And hopefully from this conversation, you guys will understand why I love Frank so much. I got the chance to tour with him, got to play on stage with him, got to be in a band with him for a while. Quite possibly one of the most amazing drummers I've ever played with. No offense to all the other drummers I've played with, but Frank is a machine. We go into a lot of things in this episode. We talk the new Stuck Mojo record that they've got in the works. We talk Fozzie. We talk some Chris Jericho. We talk Kiss. We talk, you know, fatherhood. We talk all kinds of great stuff. We even talk about a band that him and I had talked about putting together while we were on the road. I'm going to rock you some Fozzie right now. This song is called Lights Go Out. This is Fozzie. Go check it out. Make sure to go download it on iTunes. Go buy it in your record store. support Fozzy, support Frank, here. His lights go out. And there you have it, guys. That was Fozzy, Lights Go Out. Got some Frank on the drums there. Man, that song just... I'm not a dancer, and if I was, I would totally be on the dance floor for that song. That song makes you want to get up and dance around and do all kinds of fun stuff in the dark. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that tune. I'm not going to keep you too much longer, so I'm going to go ahead and go right into my conversation with Frank. So here we go. Here's some Talk To Me podcast with Frank from Fozzy.
Well, hey, Frank, thanks for coming on the podcast. Thanks for taking some time.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. It's good to be here.
Good, good. Well, I'm just going to dive into this Paris stuff since it's the freshest stuff that's happened in the world of Fozzy and Frank. You guys were pretty much, in Europe right as the Paris attacks happened. You know, where were you guys at the time of the attacks?
We were in Rotterdam, and it actually was the first night of our tour when we heard about it. And, of course, we heard about it. I don't think really on that first night, it really sank in, just the magnitude of what had happened, because we had just flown over and everybody, when you're getting settled into a tour overseas and you have the long flight that you've dealt with and you're dealing with, getting your equipment put together. And there's just so much in getting ready mentally, to be on the road that you're kind of in a daze a little bit. And when we heard about it, of course, we were shocked, but I don't think it really sank in just, you know, the magnitude of what had happened that really started to kind of day by day, you know, as we're hearing the news reports and everything, we really started to realize, you know, just how horrible what had happened is, because, you know, we were just getting the, you know, the news reports like everybody else. Yes. And we realized, you know, we knew that we were going to be playing, if not in Paris, we were going to be playing in France in a few days. I think we were playing there like maybe 5 days later, 6 days later. And it wasn't actually in Paris, but it was in kind of a suburb of Paris. I don't remember the name, but we were, I think we were about 20 miles, 25 miles outside, you know, the city of Paris. You know, there was concerns, you know, should we cancel the show, this, that, and the other. And, we didn't really consider that option very seriously. Cause you know, we didn't want to cancel. We wanted to continue on. And, you know, it was nerve wracking, you know, but I never really personally felt unsafe doing the show or anything like that. You know, I kind of kept my eye on the back of the club, you know, to see if anybody suspicious came in, you know.
Right.
But you know, the show went off without a hitch. It was a great show. We did a, Chris, you know, mentioned what had happened, you know, Jericho, our singer, and he called for a minute of noise as opposed to a minute of silence. And we had the audience just scream as loud as they could for a solid minute. And, you know, in tribute to the innocent victims. And we posted that, you know, he posted that on Twitter, and that got, you know, some attention. And so,
yeah, so...
it's just one of those things. When one of those things happens, you know, you got to try not to let it, you know, affect your normal life, because that's exactly what they're trying to do, is they're trying to instill fear, you know?
Yeah, you guys are definitely like one of the few bands that kept going. I know a lot of people canceled their Paris dates, you know, a lot of people, you know, some bands canceled their entire European tours, but you guys were one of the few that kind of went ahead and went along with your tour as planned. And so when you played that show, you know, right outside of Paris, how were the fans? Was it a, you know, decent turnout? Were they, you know, nervous? Could you tell any difference in the crowd reaction at that show?
Not really. I mean, as many times as we've played in France or, you know, in Paris, it seemed, everything seemed pretty normal. You know, we had a good turnout. We had about the, you know, the kind of turnout we expected. It wasn't like all of a sudden no one showed up or out of fear or, you know, everything was pretty normal, which is good. You know, it's like, that's what you want, is when things like that happen, you want to return to normal as quick as possible. And I certainly understand, you know, people, you know, canceling their tours or what have you. I mean, I have a wife and a kid at home. I don't want anything to happen to me, obviously. You have to think about, taking any unnecessary risks, but, you know, playing our tour, doing our shows and everything is just our normal life, you know, and it's one of those things where if something's going to happen, it's going to happen. You don't interrupt your entire life out of fear like that, because that's exactly what they want. You know, and I know that's easy to say, having come home safe and sound, and, you know, so many people that night in Paris didn't. But you know, at some point you have to stand up and say, you know, I refuse to allow you to dictate my life, because that's what they want, you know.
Right after that Paris attack happened, I actually went and saw Machine Head here in Louisville. And I was kind of, you know, it was funny. It's only a couple of days later, and, you know, you go to the show wanting to have a good time. But the whole time I'm like kind of looking around and seeing, you know, what could happen, you know, just keeping my surroundings in check. So it was definitely a different experience.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having kind of an awareness that when you're in a situation like that, either at a concert or a sporting event, any place where you're in a place where there's a crowd of people, you know, that there's the potential for, you know, for danger. You know, I mean, go to a soccer game in Europe, you know, there's a potential for danger, you know, anytime you're in a crowd. And there's nothing wrong with being wise enough to say, okay, if something should break loose, if something should happen, even if it's a fire, if it's anything else, what are my options? How do I get out of here? I remember a long time ago, the club fire in Rhode Island, the whole, you know, Great White thing. for a long time after that. Anytime I went into a club for any reason, I always had my eye on the exits, you know, like if I have to get out of here fast for some reason, what am I going to do? You know, there's an exit there, an exit there, you know, and I don't think that's being paranoid. That's just being, I think that's just being prudent is, you know, when you're in a building with a crowd of people, there, you know, a lot of things can happen and you just need to be prepared to know, how am I going to get out of here if I have to get out of here? You know,
it's definitely, definitely a crazy time we're living in. And, you know, that's pretty terrible, but that tour, you guys, so let's get on the positive of that tour. You guys were out with Nonpoint, such a great band, mm-hmm. another great band out there on tour. So just give me some highlights of that tour. I mean, I know it kind of started off rough, but I mean, were there some epic shows on that one or?
Yeah, Nonpoint were a great band to tour with. I had never met them. I've seen them, you know, from being in the scene. Of course, you know, we've played a couple festivals that they were on, and I was aware of who they are, but I'd never really met them. And, you know, they're all really nice guys, you know, really professional and, you know, really down to earth. And it was a great bill, and everything went really well, even though they're a much different band. From Fozzy, you know, they're much more, they're a little bit heavier band and a little bit more kind of new metal style of music, whereas we're a little bit more of like a kind of rock band, you know, that's a little bit more of kind of a good time vibe as opposed to a heavy thing. And but it worked really well, you know. I think it's good to have, you know, bands that bring a little something different to the table, you know.
Yeah.
And we all got along really well. The shows went really well. We had probably the best show was in England. We played in a place called Chester, which none of us had ever heard of before. There's so many kind of small little, you know, towns and hamlets in England. I mean, we've been to England so many times, and every time we go over there, we end up playing someplace that we've never played before. And I'm like, how many towns are in this country? You know, and because it's a small country, yeah. You know. And so we played this place, you know, we played a place called Chester, and we'd never played there before. And it was pretty much the show of the tour. It was close to sold out, really good crowd, very vocal crowd. And, you know, we'd never played there before. So, you know, there was a lot of people who had wanted to see us and hadn't had a chance to see us for a long time. And so that was one of the ones that was a real highlight of the tour. The very last show was a festival in Wales, more like a big club show as opposed to like an open air festival. And that was the Darkness was the headliner, and they turned out to be a great band for us to open for. The crowd didn't really know who we were, and we were really able to, you know, turn them, you know, like get them on our side by the end of the show. And they were, you know, chanting our name and everything. So, you know, our whole vibe, you know, when we play is we always try to think of ourselves as putting on the kind of show, you know, Van Halen 1979. That's kind of our motto, you know, a lot of energy, a lot of performance. The one thing that people always say about Fozzy when they see the band is how we all look. So, you know, we all look like we're having such a good time and that we're really enjoying ourselves and that we really enjoy playing. And we do. We never phone it in. You know, when we get on stage, even if you're, it's the classic story, even if you're having a bad day, you know, if things aren't going so well at home, the weather sucks, you know, whatever, you're tired of the road, you're tired of being away from home. Once you get on stage and start playing and, you know, you're playing for people that, you know, have been waiting to see you, have paid to see you, are singing along, you know, it just, it's infectious. And, you know, I mean, we're all the kind of guys that like, we live for that. We live to, you know, get on stage and perform for people. So, and it shows, and that's the one thing that people always say is like, you know, when you come to see Fozzy, you can't help but be entertained because we're so entertained ourselves by what we're doing. It just becomes infectious.
Yeah, when I had Billy Gray on the podcast back episode 2, so if you listen to this and you're a Fozzy fan, make sure to go back in the Wayback Machine, check out episode 2 with good old Billy Gray.
Uh-huh.
And I came out and saw you guys here in Louisville, and you know, I went because, you know, obviously you and I and Billy have all played together, So I wanted to go see some friends. And, I, you know, I'm one of those people that was, you know, unfortunately in that skeptical camp of, you know, I'm not a huge wrestling fan. I knew Chris Jericho. I'll go check out his band. I know the guys in the band, so I'm going to go check it out. And I was definitely one of those guys in the crowd that, you know, halfway through the show, I was like, man, this is a great rock band. Like, it was, you know, just a great show, you know, great everything. So it's definitely one of those times where, you know, I know you guys always talk about, you know, winning over the crowd and things like that. And you definitely did that with me. And I just got to say, it was such a great show. So, you know, people out there haven't checked you guys out, you know, definitely need to go check you out.
Thanks. And I appreciate that. And I think, you know, I think there's a lot of people, you know, with Chris, you know, being involved in so many other things in the world of entertainment. You know, he's obviously is known mostly for being a wrestler. But, you know, when I read about him, a lot of people are starting to kind of get that that is only a part of what he does. And I read a lot about him where they talk a lot about the band and they give it almost equal treatment. And I think there's a lot of people who are hesitant to come see us or don't want to give us a chance because they have a preconceived notion of what they're going to get. They think they're going to, I know for a fact, some people have come to see the band thinking that he's going to come out like in his, you know, wrestling tights and sing about putting people in headlocks or, you know, do rest, you know, put guys in the band into finishing moves and stuff like that. And really, I mean, there's, when you come to see Fozzy play, you can really forget about the fact that he also is a wrestler in you know, his life, because there's what we do has nothing to do with that. You know, there is, you know, if you didn't know that he was a professional wrestler, you wouldn't go, oh, okay, this guy, you know, this guy's a professional wrestler who sings in the band. It doesn't, you know, there's nothing about what we do that would give you any indication of that. And we actually really try to avoid that as well. We've had people who tried to book us on festivals or whatever, you know, who also wanted to do like a wrestling component to the show. And like, hey, could your band perform at this point? And then, you know, you wrestle at this, and it's like, no, you know, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
You know, it's like when I'm in Fozzy, I'm the singer for Fozzy, and I'm not that guy. And, I know that on stage, you know, a lot of times there will be people who come to see us who just know him from his persona in the WWE, and they'll, you know, they'll try to chant, you know, his, you know, WWE nickname or whatever, and he won't, you know, he'll kind of subtly, you know, not acknowledge them. You know, it's like when people chant Fozzy, you can tell that that's like, that's kind of what he will acknowledge. And if people chant like Y2J, which is his nickname, he'll just kind of talk over it because he just doesn't even like, he doesn't encourage that, because it's like, that's not who he is. That's a different thing. And I think if some people just would, you know, give Fozzy a little bit more of a chance, they'd probably see that it's like, oh, okay, this is an actual band. This isn't some just wrestling work. You know, it's not like some guy's gonna come running out from the wings on stage and attack him and start, you know, fake fighting him. You know?
Right.
And I think there's some people who really expect that, you know, and we've been doing it long enough to where that's slowly but surely, you know, starting to go away. I mean, the last record we did, we, you know, was our best-selling record. We had the highest charting position on Billboard that we've ever had. And so I'm hoping with this next record, which will come out next year, you know, I'm hoping we'll do even better and just keep going. And, you know, that's just the music business for you. You just keep putting one foot in front of the other, you know.
I'll give you my one great Chris Jericho story. Just when I went to see you guys in Louisville, and, you know, I went to see you guys, and just so the listeners know, yes, for a moment, you know, you and Billy were both kind of filling in for Primer 55 on the tour in 2007. So, you know, so we have a history together, played on stage together, and, you know, and
yep.
I'll just kind of jump back to that period. But, man, like, I will say that, you know, out of all the drummers that I've ever played with, if anyone asks me who my favorite one was, it's always you. Like, it always comes, back to Frank. It was such a good time. The band set, you know, had never sounded better aside from the singer at the time.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And I, you know, to reciprocate, I really enjoyed playing with you as well. I think you were a great bass player, and it was fun locking in with you. And I'm, you know, I'm not just saying that to reciprocate. I mean, it's I'm being honest. I really enjoyed it. There was that time was a really odd time, that tour we did, because there was some really positive and really negative about it. And, you know, me and you and Billy on stage was really positive. And, you know, I'm not disparaging anybody, you know, that's not my style.
Yeah.
But there was also, you know, there was elements about it where it was like, okay, I don't see myself continuing on long term in this, you know.
Right.
But I'm a, I, you know, I'm the kind of guy that, like, I appreciate all the experiences I've had, you know, it's that old cliche. I try to have no regrets, because if, you know, 'cause everything I've done has led me to where I am. And, you know, I try to look at things that way.
Oh,
and it was a good experience in that I learned a lot from that experience, you know?
Yeah. No, it was definitely a, you know, definitely a time, you know, period of time where, you know, it was a lot of transition for a lot of people. But, you know, now I kind of sit back and I'll see where you guys are playing a festival, or you guys are playing with Kiss, or, you know, you're doing something crazy like that. And I just, like, you know, I smile in the inside just because I know, you know, how much you guys have worked for it, how much you guys deserve it. And like I told, you know, I told Billy on the podcast, even talking to him, I was like, the amount of talent on that stage, you know, and I did take myself out of it. You know, you got the, you know, with you and Bobby and Billy, just, you know, it was a freaking fantastic band at the time. But, you know, so it was definitely cool. But let me get to this Chris Jericho story. You know, this all ties into it.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, we're at the show, watch the show. And after the show, I kind of go in the backstage area with you guys, just sitting there talking. And I didn't even, like, it didn't even dawn on me that I was, like, the only person in the backstage area that really didn't have anything to do with Fozzy. And then, like, a band meeting kind of broke out, or you guys were all discussing the show. And I don't know if it was something happened, or, you know, it was early in the tour, trying to work out some tour kinks or whatever. But I was just sitting back listening, and I was just standing there and just kind of hanging out. And then all of a sudden, like, Jericho just looks at me, and he was like, who are you? And I'm like, oh, shit. You know, it kind of gave me like a, you know, can you give us a minute, bro? You know, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I better get out of here. You know, like, he might put me in the walls of Jericho or something. But, yeah, that, so that's, that was...
Oh, that, and that's the funny thing is, like, you know, Chris is actually, Chris is a really nice guy, and, but he's an intimidating guy. I mean, he's, you know, even, even though the whole wrestling thing, you know, even though it may be, you know, scripted or whatever, the guy's no joke, man. He's a strong dude, and he's, you know, he grew up playing hockey and everything, and he can be intimidating, even though he doesn't, sometimes he doesn't mean to be, just because, you know, I mean, you just, he's one of those guys that you sense, you know, if this guy went off on me, I'd be in trouble. And, but he doesn't, you know, he certainly doesn't, like, you know, there's been plenty of times where we've needed to discuss something as a band, and he'll have no problem telling somebody in the room, you know, hey, can you give us a minute? And, you know, it may come off a little worse than, you know, than it means to be. But, yeah, and it's like you said, I've been in that situation too, where I've gone to see, you know, somebody play that I might have had, you know, be friends with or have an association with, and they invited me to hang out, you know, in their dressing room or whatever, and I'm sitting there hanging out, and then I start to realize that it's like, oh, okay, you know, I might have been invited back here by this guy, but I'm not invited by, you know, the rest of the band, and,
right,
like, I start to feel like these guys want to, like, talk about something in private. I need to, I'm the odd man out here, you know? So, you know, that's just one of those things, that, like they say, being in a band is like a marriage, you know, it's like sometimes, you know, everybody's kind of yell at each other a little bit and get stuff worked out, and it's better to just have privacy to do that. So,
no, I totally know all that. You know, I know all that. You know, I know all that from touring and stuff too. So I wasn't like offended or
right,
anything like that. It was just kind of funny. I even kind of came home and I was like, I think Jericho was, you know, just the way he, like,
yeah,
he was sitting down too. He was sitting down, I was standing up, and I was still like, I'm out. But no, it was good times though, man.
Yeah, when it comes from him, it can be a little intimidating for sure.
So were you in the band, like, from the beginning of Fozzy, like in the back in the Fozzy Osbourne cover band days?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It all started actually like in 1999. And we met Chris when Rich and I were in Stuck Mojo, and we were touring with Testament in 1997. And Chris is a big metalhead, and he went to see Testament in Florida where he was living, and we were opening for him, and somebody told him, and yeah, you need to make sure you get there early to see this Stuck Mojo band that's opening for him. They're really good. And he did, and he liked the band. And at the time, you know, there was kind of a wrestling connection because we had done a video with some, for our last album, we had done a wrestling video with some other people.
Yeah.
And we used to carry, we used to put like the wrestling action figures on top of Rich's amp and stuff like that. We were kind of cross promoting, and he noticed that. And he wasn't in WWE at the time, but he was making a name for himself. And I think he introduced himself to Rich after the show or whatever. In any case, it wasn't long after that that he kind of became friends with the band kind of thing. And Rich was telling him about this idea to do kind of a tribute to the 80s metal, you know, cover band thing called Fozzy Osbourne. And he said, well, I can sing, you know, I'd like to do that. And we said, yeah, sure, you know, and it just kind of started like that. And we did a couple shows. They were not too serious, but they were fun. And all of a sudden we had people like offering us a record deal. And we ended up getting signed to Megaforce of all things. And, you know, we put out the first album, and which was mostly covers. We did a couple of original songs. And, you know, I think they thought that this was going to be like, you know, some really huge thing, and it did well, but I think people were just a little confused because we did like a mock documentary about the band that was kind of a Spinal Tap kind of thing. And people were confused as to whether we were a real band or if we were just a wrestler's kind of side gig kind of thing. Like if we had something to do with wrestling, I think it took a lot. People that were confused by what we were doing. And even though the record got good reviews as it is, it just didn't really catch on. And we ended up doing a second record like 2 years later and kind of the same format, mostly covers, but a couple of originals. And when we would play up the whole humor aspect with like wearing wigs and costumes and all that stuff. And it was fun, and we did okay. But you know, we kind of started to think, you know, we could do this for real if we wanted to. And, you know, around 2004, we decided to drop all the, you know, we were almost kind of Steel Panther before there was a Steel Panther.
That was actually my comparison I was about to make, yeah.
I'm sorry, say again?
I said that was the comparison that I was about to make. I was like, it sounded like a Steel Panther type band.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. We were kind of them before they were. And then we decided to, you know, drop the act and just be taken seriously as a band. You know, whether it's the right idea or not, who knows, you know, cause look at where Steel Panther is. But I mean, you know, I say that, but I'm glad we did. Cause I wouldn't have been happy. I mean, I love Steel Panther. We've toured with those guys. I think they're fantastic. I love them to death. I got nothing but good things to say about them, but I don't know that I would want to be in that band,
right.
You know, just because it's not my personality. And I don't think I would have been happy, you know, even at their level of success, which their level of success is huge. I mean, they are doing really, really, really well. Even if we were touring at the level they are and having the kind of success that they are, I don't ultimately think I would be happy just because, you know, I don't really myself like to mix my humor and my metal, you know,
right.
I think, you know, one is one and the other is the other. I think it's great for them and I can enjoy them, but I don't like walking off stage, making people laugh. You know,
right.
I want them to cheer because they were entertained and they had a good time, but I kind of want to be taken seriously. I'm kind of guy that enjoys like, you know, because I picked up the drums to, you know, to get away from the laughter. You know, I was kind of a, you know, I was kind of an awkward kid in high school. And, you know, it took me a while to feel kind of comfortable within my own skin. I think a lot of people can relate to that, being the odd man out and kind of the weirdo or the, you know, the picked on kid in high school. So I didn't like being laughed at and, you know, being on stage and playing drums and being in a heavy band or a rock band and blowing people's minds is what I wanted. I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to be laughed at. I wanted to, that was my escape from being laughed at, was being
right.
A drummer in a band. So to do, you know, to be a part of a band that's goal is to get people laughing at you is not something that really works for me. So I was, that's a roundabout way of saying I'm glad that we dropped the pretense. I'm glad we dropped the whole kind of humor aspect and just became, you know, a rock and roll band. You know, we're obviously not death metal. We're not out to scare people. We want people to enjoy themselves and have a good time. But it's in that kind of Van Halen, AC/DC kind of vein of just being, you know, a great rock and roll band that entertains you and, you know, is a good escape for an hour and a half, you know,
right.
not a comedy routine.
I want to get into a little bit of Stuck Mojo in a minute, but I just kind of want to, like, sure. how do you feel about, like, I know that, you know, Stuck Mojo had some decent success, you know, you guys were playing big shows, things like that, but then you had kind of a personal lull in the mid 2000s. You know, to where you were playing with me at like Bar and Grill kind of places. And then, you know, you come back and then Fozzy, you know, decides to kind of come back around and, you know, just put out some great records and getting up there and playing, you know, Downloads and playing on the Kiss Cruise and things like that. So do you feel like kind of, since you had that lull in the middle, do you feel like there was like a, do you appreciate it more now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think every band or artist, they kind of go through those ups and downs. I think if you look, I mean, even not comparing us to a band like the Rolling Stones, but even a band that big and that respected went through a period in the 80s where they were kind of by the mainstream press. I mean, now a band like the Rolling Stones is worshipped, but you look back far enough, they went through a time where they went through kind of a phase where a lot of their songs were kind of disco-y and they seemed to lose their way artistically. And they weren't doing the kind of numbers that that they had been, and they were kind of looked at as dinosaurs. And they went through a down period. I mean, it's the kind of down period that they were still making the kind of money that most musicians would kill for. But, you know, comparatively to them, I'm sure they were like, kind of disillusioned as to what happened. You know, we were the biggest thing and the most respected thing in the world, and we're a little bit of a joke now, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists go through that. You know, you look at every artist that's had a long career, they have those peaks and valleys. And, you know, we went through, you know, a really rough time in the early 2000s just because, you know, the music industry had changed so much. And you know, we were kind of part of that, like, early to mid-90s, you know, new metal, kind of rap metal movement, and that kind of fell out of fashion for a while, and we were kind of looked at as dinosaurs to a degree. You know, we were like the young, you know, the hot thing, the young thing in the mid-90s, but 10 years later, you know, people started to look at us as, you know, the past and a bunch of, you know, dinosaurs, old guys. And, but now, if you are able to be strong and just, like, keep, you know, your eyes on the prize and keep your vision, so to speak, you stick around long enough, you start to get respect just for having stuck around, you know, and just for having continued to do what you do. And then, you know, the people who were 15 coming to see you when they were 15 are now 30 and have kids of their own, and they're passing on your music to their kids or their younger siblings or whoever. And, you know, these kids who are now 12, 13, or 14 today are discovering this music that's like, it's fresh and new because no one's doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a new record coming out that I really think is going to, you know, surprise some people because it's Stuck Mojo. It's what we've been doing, but to a lot of kids who are into heavy music these days, they're going to hear it and they're going to hear something that is different that they've never heard before. They're going to go, wow, this is fresh. This is new. I've never heard this. And so it's just a matter of sticking to your guns, doing what you believe in. You're going to hit those hard times, you know, most likely you're going to, you know, go through those artistically confusing times. But if you're strong and you believe in what you're doing, you believe in the core of what made you good in the first place, you come out on the other end, you know?
So with this new Stuck Mojo, it's with Bones and Rich and Corey?
Is it actually, it won't be. We did the reunion show, and it was great.
Uh-huh.
And we did a couple of other shows that were great. but it was one of those things that, you know, not to go into too much detail, we're going to continue on, but it's going to be me and Rich and two other guys.
Okay.
Those
two haven't been announced yet. All.
It hasn't been announced yet officially, but I was told that, you know, I can say that. and so there will be a new record. The record is done. I think it's the best album we've ever done. I know everyone says that, but I mean, I've let a few people preview it, and I know Rich has let a few people preview it, and the responses are from people whose opinions we respect, who have no reason to be dishonest.
Right.
We're like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know? So I really think, it will silence any doubters. If anybody, you know, hear like, oh, Stuff Mojo put out a new record, but it's not with the guys that I want to be in the band, so it can't be any good. Well, they'll get a surprise when they hear it. This album is not fooling around, and it's not, you know, we've done some experimental things in the past. You know, any artist wants to push the boundaries of what they do and what they're known for. So they try different things, and sometimes those things don't work out. But this record, you can depend on, you know, like the kind of thing that you want to hear from our band. If you're a fan, you will hear on this record. You've got nothing to, let's just say, if you're a Stuff Mojo fan, you've got nothing to fear.
That's awesome. So I want to kind of go back to the origins of Stuck Mojo, because, you know, looking back in the pantheons of like the new metal, rap metal scene, I mean, I believe Stuck Mojo is up there with, you know, one of the first. You know, I can't really think of any other band, especially like just a rock band with a you know, rapper as a singer. You know, what kind of what took you guys in that direction at the time? I mean, what was the influences? What made you want to put Stuck Mojo together?
So yeah, Stuck Mojo came together actually about 1989, and I actually wasn't in the band initially. I've known Rich since about 88. I mean, he and I have known each other for a long time, but when he put the band together, I was actually in another band, and you know, it took a while before I was actually playing with them. But the band came together as kind of a little bit more of a traditional kind of a funk rock band that was popular at the time. You know, the Chili Peppers were really big at the time, and you know, Faith No More had just had that huge album, The Real Thing. And so the whole funk rock movement was really in full swing. And that's kind of how Stuck Mojo started out, with a traditional singer and Rich playing guitar, and Dwayne Fowler, the bass player, who played on the first record. And, you know, they were wanting to experiment, you know, with a different sound. And Rich was working at a pizza joint at the time, and doing deliveries, and Bones was actually in the kitchen making pizzas. And he would hear Bones was a rapper, and he would hear Bones rapping and thought, man, this guy's really good. And I wouldn't mind like kind of incorporating that into what we're doing, you know, incorporating some rap into what we're doing. And you know, this was all before, you know, Rage Against the Machine had hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were some, you know, of course, people had experimented with rap and rock up to that point, you know, the whole Run DMC and Aerosmith collaboration. And there were a couple bands that had gotten signed trying to make it as like bands with rappers involved. It was all still in its infancy at the time. And Rich wanted to recruit Bones to come in and teach their singer kind of how to rap, you know, and give him some guidance on how to incorporate like rap into what he was doing as a singer. And apparently that didn't go over so well. The guy didn't want to do that. He's like, I'm a singer, I don't want to do that, blah, blah, blah. And Rich really liked what Bones brought to the table at the time. So he decided, well, I just want to bring Bones in as our front man. I want him to front the band. And he got rid of the singer. And they were actually, you know, called Stuck Mojo at the time. The singer had actually come up with the name, and then, you know, Rich, you know, fired him in effect and brought in Bones. And so Rich is really like the original member of the band. And so they brought Bones in, and he became the front man. And a lot of bands at the time who were mixing rap and rock, a lot of them were more trying to sound like rap with instruments. You know, they played guitars and drums, but they still, you know, were the guitars were kind of trying to imitate turntables and things like that. They were almost like, you know, they were live bands that were trying to sound rap, whereas Stuck Mojo, even though they were started out with much more of a funky kind of edge to them, they were still very much a rock band that was fronted by a rapper. And that was really unique at the time. And particularly around 1990 or 91, when they really started to kind of drop a lot of the funk element and become a heavy band, you know, and Stuck Mojo was kind of the first band, at least that I know of, that was like a traditional, like Van Halen style, one guitar, one bass, one drummer, with the guy up front not being a Freddie Mercury or a David Lee Roth or anything like that, but, you know, Chuck D,
yeah.
You know, a rapper fronting a traditional heavy rock band. And then, of course, you know, Rage Against the Machine came along, and they were in L.A., and they got, you know, they got signed first, and they put their album out first and everything. I mean, being in Atlanta was, you know, a disadvantage to them getting signed, because when Rage Against the Machine came about, they were right there at the record label's doorstep. And then, to their credit, they're a great band. You know, they deserve what they've gotten. But when Stuck Mojo was trying to find a deal, you know, a lot of people were like, well, Rage Against the Machine already exists. You know, that's how short-sighted, you know, record labels can be. You know, it's like, but we're still a great band. That, you know, this band has still built up a great following and has, you know, a lot of support, you know. So, but anyway, that's how it all started. I came about in about 92 and played with the band for a while. Didn't really work out the first time, you know, for various reasons, but I ended up coming back after the first record came out, and they did their first tour, and they played with Machine Head. That was when things started not working out with Dwayne, the bass player, and they had a drummer named Brent at the time, and they both ended up leaving the band, and Corey and myself came in early 96, and that was the start of, I mean, they had developed a really good following at that point, but when we put out the second record with the new lineup, and especially when we put out the third record, Rising, and, you know, Rising was like the biggest selling album in Century Media's history up to that point. This is 98, and we had like the biggest first week sales of any record they'd ever had. And, you know, Rising was kind of like our big record. And so that was the lineup that everybody remembers, even though that wasn't the original lineup. It was the kind of classic lineup that people remember, because that's when we did our most touring. You know, they had really only done one nationwide tour with the old lineup, whereas when Corey and I joined the band, we toured the USA several times. The first time we went to Europe was with that lineup, you know, and when the band really started to get mainstream attention was that lineup of guys. And so that's why people always remember that as like the original band, when, you know, if you look at the back cover of the first CD, you know, Corey and I aren't on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we did the next two records, and those were the records that kind of everybody really remembers the band for. So, and, you know, and we just, that was our lives for those years. It was, you know, living in a van, playing clubs, getting to do some really good festivals, and, you know, opening for some great bands. We opened for Testament. We opened for Typo Negative. I mean, we toured with Testament. We toured with Typo Negative. We toured with Pantera. You know, we did the Dynamo Festival in Holland for the first time, on the main stage. And, we did a bunch of other prestigious festivals, and it was a great time. You know, I don't think we really realized at the time what a great time it was. And I think that's just kind of human nature, you know, that whole, you don't realize what you have until it's gone, because we were so focused on getting to the next level. You know, we were so focused on wanting to, you know, get more people to the shows and sell more records, and because you know, this was our full time, this was our lives, you know, yeah. This was our thing. The label we were on had a lot of different bands. Some of them were successful in Europe and other places, but they didn't tour full time. they had jobs, and they put out records when they could get time off from their jobs, and they would tour when they could get time off from their jobs. And, you know, some of them would tour very successfully, but, you know, just in their, maybe in their home country or something. Whereas we went everywhere we could, and we lived in the van, and, you know, we did 250 shows a year. I mean, we were the only band on their label that did that many shows a year and traveled to the extent that we did at the time. And, it was just difficult because we really felt like we felt like it with a little bit more support, we could really be, you know, like a Pantera level success. We were never going to be a big radio band. We didn't have hit songs, you know. We were not going to be that kind of band that had like a huge hit single and stuff like that. But we saw no reason why we couldn't, you know, put out a gold or platinum album and, you know, do 4,000 and 5,000 people consistently. And we could just never quite get to that level just because I, you know, for some reason the record label, you know, didn't really want to, you know, take the chance to really get behind us, you know, and really put some serious money behind it and say, okay, you know, this is, we're going to break this band huge, you know, and a rising tide lifts all boats, you know, and, whenever we would have some kind of success, they would kind of, it seemed like they would go, "Well, that's great. Now let's see how we can, you know, help some of our other bands." And we're like, "Well, your other bands don't tour. Why don't you help us? We're the ones that, you know, you know, we're the ones that are kind of leading the charge here. Why don't you put some more power behind us?" But that's just the way, that's the way the business goes.
Yeah. Well, so back then when you guys were, you know, doing all the things, but you were seeing other bands like, you know, like a Korn or a Limp Bizkit, you know, just blowing up beyond, you know, making MTV's TRL and all that stuff. Somewhere along the lines, I'm sure that they might've even been, you know, inspired by you guys to do a little bit more of the rap stuff, you know? So it's kind of like, you know, so you guys were more of the originators, but you were seeing like the newer bands kind of just like blowing by, you know, was there a lot of talk about that, like in the band?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really hurt, you know, because, and I have respect for all those bands. I'm not gonna talk badly about any of them. You know, they all deserve whatever success they have. But it was tough because there's a lot of success to go around, you know, and we felt like we, you know, had earned more than we got. And, you know, like, for example, Seven Dust, who are our friends and a great band and deserve everything they, you know, have earned. We took their demo tape when they were still called Crawl Space with us over to Europe on our first tour in 96. And it's what we were playing their demo between sets, you know, before we would go on, the audience was hearing the Crawl Space demo, which eventually became Seven Dust. And then to see them get signed to TVT and get all this push behind them, and, you know, get a gold record and start doing all these numbers, you know, and then like 2 years later, we're opening for them. It was just like, you know, how did that happen? You know, I mean, we're every bit the band they are. In fact, you know, we in a lot of ways inspired them. Why are they blowing up? And our label is just going, you know, you guys should be happy with what you've got. It's just, it was tough. You know, we had a lot of tough talk, you know, talks with our label, and you know, we just, our whole opinion, our whole attitude was, look, if you're not going to get behind us, you know, give us the kind of push that these other bands are getting from their labels, let us go and let us go out there in the marketplace and you know, see if we can get somebody to support us like that. And it's like they didn't want to put any money behind us, but if anybody wanted to take us away, they wanted a big paycheck. You know, right. they wanted like us to be bought for this big amount of money. And since we weren't the kind of band that was going to have big radio success, you know, all the other labels were like, you know, well, we like this band. We want to put that kind of money into them, but not just to get them on the label. You know, you know, it's like they would have had to spend a whole entire marketing budget for an album just to get us free, then start spending the money, you know. And a lot of labels would look at it as like, well, you know, they're a great band and, you know, they're worth X amount, but they're not worth X amount plus, you know,
right,
another X, you know what I mean? it's like when you're running a marathon, you have to run a couple of, if you're at the back of the pack, you have to run a couple of 3 or 4 miles just to get to the starting line. You know, you're not running 26 miles, you're running 32 miles, you know, in total. And I think that's the way they kind of looked at it. It's like, well, if we could just like spend this amount of money to get them and put out a record and work it to radio and promote them, that'd be one thing. But, you know, we're having to spend that just to get them free of their contract and then spend them, you know, like double it to do all that. The labels just, well, they're great, but they're not worth that. And so we were just kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And we just saw that, like, we seem to be kind of like, we're not going to be able to break out of this cycle that we're in. And, you know, that's when we started kind of being disillusioned and looking towards other things. And, you know, it happens. It's happened to many more bands than us. You know, it's just the way the business is. And it's tough. You just got to, you know, realize that that's reality and do the best you can. But it definitely hurt that a lot of bands that would cite us as an influence, you know, would go on to such great things. I remember in 98, when Ozzfest was like the biggest thing in the world, you know, half the bands on stage were wearing Stuck Mojo shirts. There was a picture of Logan from Machine Head wearing our shirt on stage in Rolling Stone magazine, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember people telling me, you know, we thought we were going to get offered Ozzfest that year and we didn't. And I remember people telling me, I thought you guys were on the bill because half the shirts I saw in the audience were Stuck Mojo shirts, you know? And so it was just kind of, it's like the fans knew and we knew, but our record company didn't know, you know? And it's just like, it was just frustrating feeling like it was like running in a bad dream, you know, where you're running as hard as you can, but your feet are just slipping out from under you, or, you know, you're up to your knees in sludge or whatever, and you can't get any forward progress no matter how hard you try, you know?
Right.
But it's the old saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know, you just, you deal with it. You realize that a lot of other people have it a lot worse than you. You try to look at the bright side, and you enjoy what you do, and you try to create and do the best, make the best music you can, and keep moving forward.
That's crazy. So I was listening to this interview with this guy from the band Attila the other day, and they're from Atlanta. They're like a rap, they're like a rap metalcore band, right? Mm-hmm. And he's sitting there talking about all of his influences, and he was like, yeah, I used to love this band out of Atlanta. And he said some other band other than Stuck Mojo, and then even the interviewer said something about you guys, and he almost like acted like he had never heard of you guys. And I'm like, how are you in like a rap metal band in the city of Atlanta and never even like heard of Stuck Mojo? I was just, it pretty much blew me away that, you know, that they were pretty much.
I guess it's possible. I don't know that I believe it, but I guess it's possible, you know. We've gotten a lot of respect from a lot of people, and that's really rewarding. When we did this reunion show, that I can't believe it's coming up on a year since we did the reunion show at Masquerade. We had a lot of people posting on Facebook about, you know, their growing up on listening to our band. And there was a lot of people like, you know, the singer from Alice in Chains is from Atlanta, and he used to play in an Atlanta band called No Walls and a couple others. And, you know, he's now singing for Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
And he's posting on Facebook about his memories as a teenager of seeing Stuck Mojo in Masquerade and how crazy it would always be and everything. And, you know, so many people, in the heavy music industry, you know, have so many nice things to say about Stuck Mojo. It's really flattering, and it's really, it's rewarding, you know, to know that we've influenced people. I mean, when somebody comes up to you, it's, you know, we were just in, our last show in England, the drummer for Bullet from the Valentine came out to the show, but friend of the band. He's a friend of Fozzy, and you know, he's a Stuck Mojo fan from back in the day. And you know, he told me that, you know, Stuck Mojo was one of the reasons he plays music. And you know, when somebody tells you that, especially somebody who's been as successful as that, it's really flattering.
Right.
You know, I've had a few people tell me that I'm the reason they started playing drums. And you know, I'm tempted to tell them, you know, you need a better reason than that. But you know, that's just me being self-deprecating. It's really that's me being self-deprecating, because it's hard for me to, you know, take a compliment like that. You know, it's weird to think that something you did has that kind of influence on somebody. It's really rewarding when something you worked on in your little rehearsal room in Atlanta, you know, you meet somebody from across the world and they tell you how much it means to them. You know, it's that's worth all the money in the world, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a crazy time out there. So just kind of bridge the gap between Stuck Mojo and Fozzy. So how do you feel now having a singer that like can actually sing, you know, Bones being predominantly a rapper, but now you've got, you know, Jericho who's a full on singer.
It's interesting because, you know, one is rhythmic and one is melodic, and there's advantages and disadvantages to both. You know, playing in Stuck Mojo and playing in Fozzy are just such two different experiences. It's hard to compare the two. I'm really grateful that I have the opportunity to do both, you know. And they're just such different animals, even though, you know, kind of the foundation of both bands musically is Rich and myself. We take different approaches to either one. And, you know, Stuck Mojo is so much more based on rhythm and I'm trying to think of another word for rhythm, just that kind of staccato, that staccato feel. You know, it's all about the riff, and it's all about, you know, Rich and myself locking in on the riff and becoming like the guitar and the drums becoming one pulse and one machine, you know, and making the audience move, you know, really making the audience move involuntarily. It's like when you come to see a Stuck Mojo show, whether you're, you know, in the pit going crazy or just standing at the back of the room bobbing your head, the whole idea was to create that feeling of just like it's involuntary, your body has to move to it because it speaks to something primal in you, you know. It taps right into the, you know, the medulla oblongata, I guess, you know, in your brain. It's a primitive thing. It speaks to something, you know, that's ages and ages of DNA, that rhythmic pulse, you know. And Fozzy is much more about, there's riffs, but it's much more like melodies and harmonies and rock and roll, as opposed to, you know, rock as opposed to metal, you know. It's like playing in Van Halen one night and Pantera the next, you know. It's like, of course there's similarities, but there's that different vibe, that different basis, I guess you could say. Fozzy is much less concerned with the riff and more concerned with, you know, the melody and the chorus and getting people to sing along, as opposed to putting in a mouthpiece and trying to bash the other guy's brains in. You know? So yeah, I'm just grateful that I have the chance to do both. You know, I can appreciate both of them. They both satisfy, you know, different parts of my personality as a person and as a musician. You know, sometimes it's fun to go on stage and actually like almost be, you know, do something that's almost scary and almost dangerous, you know, like this could really get out of hand. And sometimes it's great just to, you know, just to relax and have fun and just like, you know, be an outlet for people to cheer as opposed to, you know, get their aggressions out, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, it's hard to describe. Like I said, I'm just happy to have the opportunity to do both. And it looks like next year, you know, there'll be albums from both bands out. So I'll be having to shift gears continuously going from one band to the other. But I like that. I'm looking forward to it.
Very cool. Yeah, we're actually just, I believe we've just hit our hour, so I'm going to start wrapping this up. You know, we can take as much time as we want, but, you know, we've just, once we hit an hour, I just kind of like to not want to keep you all night. So currently, the record for Stuck Mojo is ready to go. Are you guys putting it out on a label? Or are you guys doing it DIY? How are you guys doing that?
We're going to do it on a label. I don't know who it is yet. We have some offers. That's all, between Rich and our management and the labels and everything. I don't really participate in that process because, you know, I think it's important for every ship to have a captain. And Rich, when it comes to Stuck Mojo, is definitely the captain of the ship. And it's not a dictatorship. He wants input. He's interested. He'll ask me all the time, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I will definitely be glad to give him my opinions. I think I've steered him away from some wrong decisions in the past and, you know, creatively and business wise. And he's definitely open to other people's suggestions, but when it comes down to it, you have to have somebody who has the veto power. You have to have somebody who says, okay, this is what we're doing. I've heard everything. I appreciate everybody's opinion, but I've weighed it all in my head, and this is the way we're going, you know? And right. So when it comes to all the, you know, label decisions and business decisions, that's between Mark and Rich. And, you know, Mark is our manager, Mark Willis, and Rich, they make that decision. And, you know, so I basically wait to hear, you know, what's going to happen. But I know we'll be doing it on a label, and we'll be putting the record out hopefully sometime in the summer. If I'm not mistaken, we're actually already booked on a couple of festivals overseas for Stuck Mojo. As far as Fozzy, I know we're going to do another record, but since we just finished touring with Fozzy, that's a little bit more kind of the actual plans for playing next year are a little bit up in the air, probably won't be until fall. So, you know, I'll be a little bit inactive for the first few months of the year, but I have some plans with other people here at home to try to keep busy musically, some projects that, that hopefully I'll be able to play, make a little bit of money and not have to tour, you know, it's nice to be able to do what you enjoy doing and make a living at it and be able to be at home as well, you know? So, there'll be probably plenty of touring, late summer, early fall and winter of next year. So
actually this just popped in my head, but do you remember the band that you and I talked about creating while we were out on tour?
You're going to have to refresh my memory.
The Kiss Fits. Where we were going to do half.
What?
They were called the Kiss Fits. We were going to do half Kiss, half Misfits covers.
Yes. Yes, I do remember that.
That pops up.
I do remember that. Hey, you know what? And if you lived in Atlanta, I would be completely down for it.
Oh, man, that would be such a great band, like half Misfits makeup, half Kiss makeup. Oh, it was going to be ridiculous. All right, and then one last thing. Go ahead.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, go ahead. I was going to change the subject. But
I was just going to say, you know, like wearing the Kiss faces, but with the devil lock hanging down in front and all the black leather and, you know, I think that would be a great idea. I mean, basically anything you do that's got to do with Kiss is going to turn out cool. So,
yeah, that's the one thing I talked about on the podcast with Billy was, you know, when you're in the situation that we were, I mean, I got a Greyhound to Atlanta and you guys picked me up and then we drove to Florida and just like, this is the band, like, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts, this is the band. And then we get in a van and just start touring the country. You know, you're kind of just stuck with these dudes that you don't know. And I remember sitting next to you on a long drive and I don't even know how it came up, but it's like, you like Kiss? And you're like, yeah, I like Kiss. And then, you know, from then on out, you know, we were like the best of friends on the tour, but you know, so
right. Like, yeah, you know? that was what was, you know, really cool and helped break some of the monotony of, you know, the long drives, especially out west. You know, it was me, you and Bobby were the Kiss fans. Mm-hmm. And I think we passed, you know, thanks to our booking agent on that tour, we passed by Magic Mountain in California, I think like four times, you know, like north to one place, south to another place, back north. And on that same highway, we passed Magic Mountain, I think, no less than four times in like 10 days.
Every time we pass it, we're like, yes, tonight. Tonight, Kiss.
Yeah, you know? Kiss tonight. Devil roll. In fact, I still think I want to become like a producer and find some rap guy and name him Devereaux and have him do his thing just so I can say Devereaux. that if you're not a Kiss fan, you won't get any of this. But I'm sure there's some Kiss fans listening who understand what we're talking about. So yeah, it was nice to have that connection between like me and you and Bobby and being able to entertain each other with the little the Kissims,
So, right.
Yeah, that was cool, man. That was cool. If you lived here in Atlanta, we would definitely have to do some kind of Kiss involved something.
It would be a lot of fun. And I just to round it out, and I just wanted to, I know he's the boy is 1 year. He is a boy, right? You have a 1 year old boy now.
Yes, Ian, and he just turned one in November. And I was actually 4 days into our tour when he turned one. So that, unfortunately, being a traveling musician, that's one of the things that, you got to deal with is missing some birthdays and stuff like that. But I'm here for Christmas. And so I'm here for his kind of first official Christmas.
Oh, that's awesome. So how's everything, how's being a father?
Oh, it's amazing, man. I mean, it's just... It really changes you. I mean, you have one kid?
I have three.
Oh, you have three. Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that. Wow. How old are they?
13, 10, and one. Yeah. My son, my youngest son. Yeah. My youngest son just turned one in October. So I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah. It's really amazing. And especially someone like me who never wanted to have kids. It's amazing how it changes you, and it's amazing how it changes your perspective on life. And, like I said, I didn't want to have kids. I always said, I'm too selfish. I'm too self-involved. I'm too wrapped up in my own freedom to go where I want and do what I want. And I don't want that responsibility. And, my wife and I weren't planning on it, and, it happened. And it was a big surprise because, we had never, we've been together. February will be our 10-year wedding anniversary, and we've been together as a couple for 13 years, and we had never even had a close call, anything. I mean, we both thought that we biologically, that we couldn't have kids, and we were okay with that because, I'd never been tested. She hadn't been, but we had never had anything happen, so we just kind of assumed that it was, and especially, our ages and everything else, we'd assumed that it was just kind of a done deal, that it was never going to happen, and we were both fine with that. And then one day she came to me and said, I think I'm pregnant, and it was just like, wait a minute, that's not supposed to happen. And, when she confirmed it after going to the doctor, I was actually devastated because I thought, I've got to give up everything I enjoy doing. That's what, when you don't want to have kids and you're told you're going to have a kid, that's your first thought is like, my whole life is going to change, but you don't realize that it's going to change for the better. And all through her pregnancy, people were asking me if I was excited, are you excited? And I was kind of like, well, not really. I'm just kind of indifferent to the whole thing, and I was actually a little bit worried personally that, that I wouldn't feel a connection to him or anything. And of course, the minute I laid eyes on him, all that changed. Everybody told me they would. They said, as soon as you hold him, as soon as you see your son, you're gonna fall head over heels. And that's exactly what I did. And now it's just like, I can't imagine life without him. He's just, I just think about all the things I want to show him and teach him, and and people are like, are you going to buy him a little drum set? And I'm like, hell no, I'm going to buy him a little play doctor kit or a little play lawyer kit or something like that. I want him to actually accomplish something in life.
Right.
So, but he's amazing. And, we couldn't be happier. We just like totally head over heels for him. So,
yeah, that was the one cool thing about that primer tour that we did together. And actually my son was brought out to our sound check, And and I remember, like, he was in the back of the room with his little headphones on or whatever, and I was sound checking the bass, and the next thing I get done, and all of a sudden I hear, like, "Good job, Daddy," like, you know, from the back of the room. Because I guess
I'm looking forward to that day, you know, when he gets to actually see me play, you know. That's going to be pretty special. I was just practicing at home one day, just with the practice pad on the table with the sticks, you know, just keeping warmed up. And he watched me do that, and he's just fascinated by it. And I'm like, oh no, I don't want to do this. I don't want him to get inspired to be a musician, man. I want him to do something else, but I'm going to support him in whatever he wants to do, you know, whatever he chooses as his passion. I'm fine with it, as long as he, you know, pursues it, you know, and takes it seriously. If he decides he wants to be a musician, okay, but you're going to take it seriously, you know?
Right.
So, but it's great. If you don't have kids, to anyone listening, if you don't have kids, I recommend it.
If you don't have kids, go grab a couple, bring them home and have fun.
Yeah. Go push a couple. You'll enjoy it.
Well, cool, Frank. Well, hey, man, we've been talking for a long time, and I know we could definitely talk many more hours. So we'll definitely do a part two down the road. And I know once you guys come through Louisville and Stuck Mojo Fozzie or whatever, whatever concoction you're going to be in coming up, I'll definitely come out and we'll have a sit down or something like that. But man, definitely appreciate you taking the time coming on the podcast, and pass on to Jericho that he needs to come on it one day too. So
I will do that. And I appreciate you having me on. It was good to talk to you.
Yeah, man.
And if you ever want me to come back, you know, maybe we'll just, if you want, we'll do an entire Kiss podcast. That'd be fine with me.
Well, yeah, we'll do the Kiss Fits podcast where we talk Kiss and Misfits. There we go.
Okay. Sounds good, man. I really appreciate you having me on.
All right, Frank, take care.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Above all this unique and hard as concrete. Oh, no.
All right, guys, that was some Stuck Mojo with Rising. Some more Frank action on the podcast. So great to have him on the podcast. Got to thank him for coming on the podcast. We were supposed to do this before they left to go to Europe for their the Cinderblock party tour. You know, with the unfortunate tragedies in Paris, can you imagine basically getting to Europe to start a tour, to start a great tour with Nonpoint? You know, getting everything ready for your tour, and then there's an attack. A lot of bands did cancel some European dates. Bands canceled their entire European tours, but Fozzy were one of the few bands that went ahead with their tours, you know, went ahead and played a Paris show. And you gotta give it up to Chris Jericho, and you gotta give it up to the rest of the guys in Fozzy for making that choice and going on with the show. So, you know, once again, just thanks to Frank coming on the podcast. Thanks to everyone who's been checking out the podcast. Make sure to hit me up at TalkToMeTalk. Let me know what you thought about this episode. Let me know what you thought about having Frank on the podcast. Also, if you're a Fozzy fan, make sure to go and check out episode 2 of Talk To Me, where I had Billy Gray. And I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart to everyone who checks out the podcast on a weekly basis. You know, checking the numbers, checking everything out. You know, got a nice core group of people that listen to the podcast. Please reach out to me at TalkToMeTalk on Twitter and Facebook.com/TalkToMeTalk. Let me know where you're listening to the podcast. Let's do a little roll call. Find out where you're listening to it. Find out where we've gone global. And you guys have a great, happy holidays. Christmas is in a couple of days. If you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas to everyone. If you celebrate something else, Happy Holidays and all that fun stuff. So you guys have a great week. Go see some family. Give somebody a hug. If you don't have anybody to give a hug to, come find me. I'll give you a hug. And we will see you guys next week. Have a great week, everybody.